Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the December 19th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola City Council, approve PTO increase by Ben Crane. The Arcola City Council approved an amendment to the employee handbook granting up to an extra 2 days paid time off for city employees. The amendment allows employees who have been employed for 17 to 18 years to accrue an extra day of PTO and employees of 19 plus years to accrue an extra 2 days or 296 hours total or 37 days per year. The other item on the agenda was the approval of a pay request for the redeveloped Main Street project totaling $250,000 to Fuller Wendt Construction. The next article is from the Villas Grove City Council. Honor Westray Family and Bird for Volunteerism. Mayor Cassandra Eversole Gunter honored the Westray Family and Christy Bird as Volunteers of the Year. The mayor noted the family's many contributions to the community over the past 40 years. They support everything in this town, including purchasing hundreds of wristbands for kids to ride, the rides at Ag Days, and so much more. They fed sports teams and teachers and have hosted countless funeral dinners, helping families begin to heal during tough times. For these reasons and so many more, we are proud to name them as Villa Grove Volunteers of the Year, Eversole Gunter stated. Carla Westray stated that the family is proud to give back to the community that has supported their family business, JR's, for the past 42 years. Christy Bird, who along with her son Tyler conceived of the Christmas Tree Lighting Festival, has worked tirelessly over the years to grow and support the festival, and for this reason, the city was happy to name her as Volunteer of the Year as well. Christy and Tyler came to me several years ago and said that they wanted It's a Wonderful Life Christmas celebrations in Villa Grove, and then, even after Tyler moved to Naperville, Christy has continued to support and coordinate events for the festival, which continues to grow every year, Eversole Gunter enthused. After the presentation of Volunteer of the Year plaques, the mayor called for approval of the consent agenda, which included minutes of the meetings from November 12th and November 25th. Also included was authorization for the payment of bills in the amount of $456,000, financial reports for September and October, a policy setting the maximum amount of financing for TIF grant loan application funding, and the approval of the purchase of aeration chemicals and application for the John Leon Reservoir. The council approved the city administrator's attendance at the 2025 WIU Rural Communities Economic Development Conference in February and the APT US and CIMTA Conference in July. Finally, the council approved the 2025 city meeting schedule for 2025. Responding to the mayor's call for department directors' reports, Administrator Jacqueline Athey noted that she had been focused on ordinance work and the TIF issues. She also noted that she had again been asked about the issue of using shipping containers for living space and that she'd be working with attorneys to draft an ordinance banning the practice. Public Works Director Mark McSell then noticed that his staff was busy doing winter maintenance and that the leaf pickup would continue for the week of 12/9 through 12/13, even though it had been announced that the collection would end on November 25th. He then stated that the aquatic treatment program at the John Leon Reservoir would begin in April, and he was taking bids for shoreline weed removal from the reservoir as well. He finally noted that he'd received an offer of $8,000 in credit for the sludge truck and salt spreader, which he recommended the council accept. He stated that the oil wagon bid had come in considerably lower than expected, and that he was prepared to refuse that bid. Public Safety Director Bob Ree reported that he had seen an increase in membership over the past few months, with 420 new memberships being purchased in the last 90 days. Chief of Police Cole Tibbetts made his report stating that Officer Ben Mingo has been successfully transitioning into his role as SRO at Villa Grove School. He also reported that he had been conducting interviews for vacant officer positions and that PTI had assured him that Villa Grove was at the head of the list for training for the future officer. Finally, he noted the recent accident on Route 130 near school was emergency medical emergency and not a DUI, as had been rumored. The council then moved to new business, unanimously approving 5 ordinances regarding TIF2. Finally, the council voted unanimously to approve the hiring of Joe Hardwick as building inspector. Finding no other business, Alderman Hooker called for adjournment at 7:24 p.m. The next article from the Arcola School Board. School levies set with 12% increase by Ben Crane. The Arcola School Board approved their 2024 tax levy, setting it at 12% increase. As previously reported, several of the district's rates are at their maximum level, so the board typically sets its levy high enough to capture any increases in the assessed valuation. Thus, the tax rate on those funds do not go up. Individual taxes go up only if the property value goes up. The board also approved the first reading on PRESS policy updates from October 2024. Following, the board voted to approve an agreement between the district and Ideal and Associates to remove asbestos from elementary school classroom floors. The purchase of sound equipment and speakers in the junior high gym was approved for $11,000, as well as the sale of a school van. We're looking to get around $2,000 for the van, says Superintendent Tom Mulligan. Before the meeting, game workers and ticket takers at athletic events were paid $25 for the evening. After board approval, workers will now be paid $25 for each game that night. For example, a high school basketball game has a junior varsity and varsity game, which would pay for $50. Elementary principal Amber Behrens noted in her principal report that Family Literacy Night was a huge success. We had over 250 people come to do activities that highlighted everyday ways to engage in literacy with their child, she said. In Principal Nick Lindsay's report for the junior-senior high school, he noted that health occupations, child care, and Illini Prairie CEO plans have been sent to the Illinois State Board of Education to give students opportunity to benefit from completing their pathways, including scholarships, entry into college programs, etc. New banners representing all Arcola High School athletics have been hung up as well. If you haven't gotten the chance to see them yet, go look at them, Lindsay said. Finally, the board approved the employment of Nancy Branson as early childhood special education teacher, Heather Poole as full-time custodian, and Yezzy Ramirez as assistant junior high girls volleyball coach. Villa Grove School Board, past levy discussion held on school officer by Gabriela Agius. The Villa Grove Board of Education approved the property tax levy for 2024, payable in 2025, with an increase of 6.37%. An increase in the tax rate is not expected as the levy increases coincide with the expected increase in assessed valuation. Individual taxes will go up only if the property value went up. The overall tax rate is expected to decrease slightly. A truth in taxation hearing was held on December 16th since the levy exceeded the 5% increase. The hearing lasted all of 2 minutes. The board approved the first reading of a PRESS plus issue number 117 and a working cash bond for Barb Alexander. The board also approved the audit report, which went well and was similar to last year. The district has a 3.9 rating. The district also submitted their application for the school maintenance program grant. This has to go through the ROE and state level for approval. This grant would match district contributions to be used for school maintenance and would be utilized for the high school restroom project. This project entails improvement of the first floor restrooms as well as the hot water line that leads to the third floor boys' bathroom. Superintendent Carol Munson also shared Vision 2030 with the board, which is a group that comes up with ideas for General Assembly of Illinois Schools regarding funding and other components. The three main ideas include future-focused learning, shared accountability, and providing excellent educational resources. Future-focused learning will focus on students' well-being and pathways to college and career. One component of this would be younger exposure to college and career, beginning in elementary school. Shared accountability takes a look at rethinking standardized testing and providing useful measures. Providing excellent education resources is about securing funding for schools to allow easier resource access. There will be a winter concert for kindergarten through third grade on Thursday, December 19th at 6 p.m. There will be a spring concert held for fourth through sixth grades. There will also be a band and choir concert on December 18th at 7 p.m. The district is looking to appoint a new student resource officer, with Officer Ben Mingo taking interest. Official SRO training will be held in March. The next front page article is Uncertainty for Arcola and Tuscola Officials Regarding Water Rate Hike by Ben Crane. As Illinois American Water looks toward their rate increase in the new year, local officials are bracing for the potential impact on residents. The company's approved increase of approximately $110 million will support continued investment in critical water and wastewater infrastructure throughout the state, according to an IAW press release. IAW anticipates the typical residential customer will see an increase of $16 on their water bill and $8.50 on their wastewater bill. However, Tuscola City Administrator Drew Howell and Arcola City Administrator Bill Wagoner are unsure of what changes residents in their cities will see. IAW has reportedly discussed a 40% rate increase, though the details remain unclear. I don't really know what to expect, said Hole. This is a number I've heard, and I just don't want to give it any unnecessary credence. While IAW has held public meetings to gather feedback, Hole noted the limited opportunities for input. There's not a lot of opportunity for feedback, just because I think it's sort of a given that, yeah, we would like it, local water bills, to be as low as possible. As a regulated public utility, IAW's rate case is ultimately decided by the Illinois Commerce Commission. They make the case, but as a regulated public utility, a monopoly, which is essentially what they have, the Illinois Commerce Commission grants them whatever, you know, whatever when they make a rate case. The commission's approval was a 30% decrease from what IAW initially requested. Tuscola officials are closely monitoring the situation, aware that any increase will impact residents. We operate our system at no profit. We have to charge enough to cover our costs of operation and the future needs and that kind of thing. With detail still emerging, Hole emphasized the complexity of calculating the final impact. If the cost of the water that we buy and then turn around and distribute it throughout town, if the cost of that water goes up, you know, pick a number, our rate will increase, likely won't be that same number. It'll be something less than that. Wagoner echoed similar sentiments. We're kind of playing with from behind here because we have their wholesale rate that they give us, and then we mark it up and sell it back to our customers, said Wagoner. While the company has broadly stated the increase will vary by district, it has not provide details to local municipalities as they struggle to prepare their own budgets and communicate the changes to residents. Until they actually give us that, it's kind of hard to parcel everything out, said Wagoner. Furthermore, the rate hike comes at a time when local infrastructure upgrades are not on the horizon because Tuscola and Arcola's operations are owned and managed by themselves. We still have to fix our own stuff on our own. I mean, they may make some planned improvements on projects in Champaign and Mattis or other facilities out there. I mean, these are the only things that would improve as far as helping our water system, Wagoner stated. With limited information and no clear plan for local improvements, residents of the Champaign District are bracing for the impact of the impending rate increase, leaving local officials to navigate with uncertainty. In the last first page story, The Christmas Eve Fire That Destroyed the Strand by Mike Carroll. According to historian Lenita Aldridge Brown, the Strand Theater in Tuscola opened in 1910 during the era of silent films. Then, after being purchased in 1929 by George Barber, it was improved to show talkies. It was remodeled in 1938 to hold 600 patrons and eventually managed by Dale Moody. After it was purchased by the Carasotti's theater chain in the 50s, it was managed by Myrtle and Montel Frohman. Then, late at night, Christmas Eve, 1967, the Strand burned to the ground, a roaring fire watched by many in town, including my classmates home from college. There were more than one theater in town over the years, but the Strand was the dominant and the last one standing. The Strand's destruction seemed to mirror not only the beginning of the demise of the downtown business district, but also the end of 20 or so years of cinematic adventures that infused us baby boomers with a naive belief that we could save the world, perfect the unperfectible. But with the Vietnam War raging, the draft lottery looming, and America literally and figuratively burning due to several powerful, often violent movements, anti-Vietnam War, women's liberation, civil rights, the dream factory that was our small movie house became just that, a dream. The period in time I'm talking about was just after World War II during the 50s, before smartphones and with television in its infancy. The populace was war-weary, ready to industrialize the nation and help rebuild the shattered world, and in need of entertainment, adventure, and escape. The local theater offered that dynamic, a visual experience of other worlds and other lives that transported you from your tedious, rooted existence to a place to forget your troubles and dream of better things to come. Small towns across the nation often had a small movie theater. Those who didn't often showed movies on the side of a downtown building. These theaters were treasured icons, especially for the coming-of-age experiences of post-World War II baby boomers, of which my classmate, born in 1947, were the vanguard. But within a decade or so thereafter, many, if not most, small-town movie theaters were gone, closed due to lack of customers, torn down for parking lots, repurposed, destroyed by fire, replaced by the larger city multiplex, all reflections of the demise of small-town life in general. A local theater at the time featured many movies focused on youngsters in the 50s of so-called coming-of-age film, especially how it opened their minds, ushering them into a bigger world out there, promoting a dream of escape, change, happiness, and bright possibilities. This special period in time in America has been dramatized in later films. For example, set in the early 50s was The Last Picture Show, a 1971 film by Peter Bogdanovich based upon a 1966 Larry McMurtry novel, Murtrick's book reflected memories of his young life growing up in Archer, Texas, population 1600, during that era. One critic says it was a movie of a town that had no reason to be there, populated by people who had nothing to do. The only escape from the lonely, windswept, near-dead town was the local movie theater, The Royal. As characters in the movie matured, changed, moved on, the symbol for the town's dying was the closing of The Royal. The two main protagonists, Sonny and Dwayne, spent their last night together at The Royal on its last night of operation before Dwayne heads off to war in Korea while Sonny stays home to run the pool hall. A sad, melancholy film that stresses the tragedy of innocent dreams shattered by reality. Its message suggests that deep sorrows of life are redeemed only by mature empathy, compassion, and love. The Last Picture Show is considered by critics one of the greatest films, some calling it a masterpiece. The Royal was a real theater in Archer, Texas, McMurtry's hometown. It burned down in 1965, with local supporters restoring and reopening it in 2000. Also considered one of the greatest films of all time is the 1988 Italian film Cinema Paradiso, based on the real-life memories of Sicilian director Giuseppe Tornatore. It also is a post-World War II coming-of-age tale of post-World War II children being heavily influenced by films shown in his small town's only movie house. The local movie house was the central setting and theme of the movie. The young director was urged to leave the small Sicilian town by his older projectionist friend to pursue dreams born from his exposure to movies, which he did. He returned to his Sicilian town in 1988, now a famous movie director, a living testament of the power of dreams born of cinema to actually impact life, future life outcomes, to discover plans to demolish his beloved Cinema Paradiso for a new municipal parking lot. As in The Last Picture Show, Cinema Paradiso uses the town's movie house as a metaphor for inevitable change, maturation, and the slow and painful transformation of childish dreams from blinding light of promise dissolving into the bright dust of warm but often melancholy memories. As indicated, Tuscola has its own Last Picture Show in Strand, located in downtown Tuscola on the south side of Middle Sale Street, which ran east to west, framed by the north and south streets of Main on the east and Park on the west. What did the Strand mean to the first wave of baby boomers of Tuscola? Perhaps Tuscola and Joseph Colwell, born in 1947, said it best in his book, Tuscola, A Memoir, Place, Time, and Meanings of a Hometown. I was 10 in 1957, my imagination susceptible to the wide-open spaces of the Old West and far-distant galaxies of outer space, and Tarzan-filled jungles. We watched the heroes defeat the villains, the scientists save us from the blob or other aliens, and brave GIs blast the enemies. Our heroes were good and wholesome, and you never saw Roy Rogers saying a bad word or getting involved with some scantily clad young temptress. He just saddled up Trigger, looked lovingly at Dale, and rode off to save the world from the villains. It was a simpler world back then. The social effects were in our heads, and good versus bad was easy to figure out. Joe's experience mirrors my experience, and from comments of other classmates, also theirs. Most I've talked to said that if they ever hit the Powerball lottery, they'd try to rebuild the Strand, and rebuilding it resurrect a sweet, innocent nostalgia for a small slice of time and place that vividly lingers within them. We'll move now to the obituary. Alice Rose McAvew Connor, 94, of Tuscola, passed away at 2 a.m. on Tuesday, December 10th, 2024, at the Haven of Arcola. Funeral services were held Sunday, December 15th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. The Reverend Rich Knofsky officiated. Burial followed in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the funeral on Sunday at the funeral home. Another article, The Pantry Closing Its Doors After 13 Years, by Ben Crane. For over a decade, the pantry in Tuscola has offered a blend of homemade soups, sandwiches, and baked goods. But after 13 years in business, the beloved breakfast and lunch spot is closing its doors for good on Christmas Eve. It was a Panera Bread Meats and Amish bulk food store, described Julie Mast, who's been with the pantry since its inception in 2011. Mast, who's been an integral part of the business for the past 13 years, shared the bittersweet emotions surrounding the decision to close. "We just kept going as what we knew, and when you love the people, it's hard to let it go," Mast said. The pantry owners, Glenn and Sue Mast, had discussed closing the business several times over the years as they were ready to retire. However, the deep connection they had formed with the community made it difficult to let go. "If your lives don't have reason to connect, it's hard to see some of the same people that we saw on such a regular basis, so many connections, and you know, it's just hard to picture letting go of that. You know, these connections and those people," Mast explained. Despite the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, which could have easily forced the pantry to fold, the business manages to thrive thanks to the support of the local community. The pantry's impact on the community extended far beyond its walls. Mass shared that their business had become a regular stop for travelers making the journey between Champaign and St. Louis. It was a long stretch, not a lot, but fast foods on the interstate, and it was fun to have regulars that were from, like, Chicago. They'd be going to St. Louis on a regular basis. They'd just pop in, you know, she recalled. As the pantry prepares to close the store for the final time, Mass is considering a new career path, potentially in interior painting. However, she remains confident that her skills and experience will make her an asset to any employer. She also expressed gratitude for the opportunity to work alongside the dedicated owners, Glenn and Sue, who never feared hard work and served as inspiring role models. The pantry's closing marks the end of an era, but the impact it had on the community will not be forgotten. It's a sweet thing to hear, you know, people's reminiscing about our favorite meals and, yeah, things like that, Mass said. The owners are looking forward to sell the business to continue operating the establishment. We've not had any interest yet, you know, short of somebody already having looking at for something like this. It wouldn't happen immediately because it would take some time to get that in place. But that would be awesome if someone wanted, you know, the recipes and the customer base, and we don't have the building, that's not ours. That would be awesome if someone wanted the recipes and our customer base. We have tons of equipment. Another article, voting starts online in January for new Illinois state flag design. The Illinois Flag Commission selected its top 10 finalists for the state flag redesign contest, with public voting slated to begin in January. Members of the commission could select up to 10 of their favorite designs from nearly 5,000 submissions prior to their December 9th meeting, where they narrowed their choices to 10 overall. Having received nearly 5,000 entries, I appreciate the creativity and passion reflected in all the submissions, said Illinois Secretary of State Alexi Janulius, whose office convened the Flag Commission meeting. Starting in January, the public will have the opportunity to vote online at www.ilsos.gov/stateflag for one of the new designs or one of the three former flag designs, including the current state flag, the 1918 Centennial Flag, and the 1968 Sesquicentennial Flag. After the public voting period, the commission will report its findings and recommendations to the Illinois General Assembly by April 1, 2025, whose members will then vote on whether to adopt a new flag, return to a previous iteration of the flag, or retain the current flag. Senate Bill 1818, sponsored by State Senator Doris Turner, 48th District, Springfield, and State Representative Cam Buckner, 26th District, Chicago, was signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker in 2023, creating the commission to gauge public desire for a new flag. Another article, classic holiday films the whole family could enjoy. Celebrants owe the joy of the holiday season to various components. Decor and gift giving go a long way toward making December a joyous time of the year. Holiday films also do their part to make this season so special. Many people have their own favorite holiday films, and the following are some that can engage viewers who are young or simply young at heart. A Christmas Story. Released in 1983, this warmly nostalgic, humorous film is a perennial favorite among families. It follows the story of Ralphie, who has his heart set on a very specific Christmas present, a Red Ryder BB gun. Amidst wintry exploits and family drama, the true spirit of Christmas manages to shine through in this beloved film. Some of the subject matter can be off color, and there are some bullying scenes, so this is a movie best watched with children who are mature enough to make it through without being scared. Little Women. Based on the Louisa May Alcott novel of the same name, the 1994 telling of this classic follows the March sisters who confront financial difficulties, romance, and family tragedies in mid-19th century Massachusetts. While it's not a traditional Christmas movie, the importance of spending time with family around Christmas time is a core theme in this coming-of-age tale. Claus. Perhaps not as well known as other animated holiday flicks, Claus, released in 2019, has a personality all its own. Postman Jesper, who is not making the grade at the Postal Academy, is sent to work in a frozen town in the north, where he discovers a reclusive toy maker named Claus. The unlikely duo ultimately team up to make the to deliver toys and bring smiles to children's faces. Meet Me in St. Louis. Starring the irreplaceable Judy Garland, this movie musical focuses on four sisters who are awaiting the 1904 World's Fair in their hometown, but learn that their father has accepted a new job and the family must move to New York beforehand. A Christmas miracle occurs and all is right in the end. Garland sings a memorable version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas in the film, solidifying this as a holiday classic. The Santa Claus. This Disney film came out in 1994 and remains a family favorite. When divorced dad, Scott, Tim Allen, accidentally kills a man in a Santa suit, he magically becomes the next Santa. He must learn to cope with the ways the transformation to the man in red interrupts his normal life, eventually giving over the magic of Christmas. Emmer Audit's Jug Band Christmas. Through this 1977 Jim Henson production is a television special, not a full-length feature. Generation X likely remembers the heartfelt tale of a poor otter family who sacrificed prized possessions to have what they needed to enter a talent contest. The goal is to win the prize money to buy a special Christmas present. Audience get to enjoy narration by Kermit the Frog. Films are a popular component that help make the holiday season so special. And games add another layer of levity to holiday celebrations. The following are some fun games to play this holiday season that can help break the ice and keep everyone laughing. Reindeer games. Everyone knows that Rudolph wanted to have fun and participate in reindeer games, but he was left on the sidelines. Inspired by the tune, everyone can participate in reindeer games at your home. These types of games can include tests of endurance and dexterity, like fruitcake eating contests, running races, or doing hurdle competitions in the yard. Candy cane home runs. Participants can see how well they can launch a marshmallow into the outfield by hitting it with a candy cane, taking the place of a baseball bat. Each participant gets three swings. The person with the most home runs wins. Guess the gift. In this game, party hosts wrap up five oddly shaped gifts specifically for the game. The gifts must be oddly shaped or just the wrapping as a decoy. Players take turns trying to guess what's inside and mark down their answers on sheets. One by one, the gifts are revealed, and if anybody guesses the gift, it's given as a prize. If more than one person guesses a gift, come up with a fun way to break the tie, such as rock, paper, scissors, or thumb wrestling. Christmas karaoke. Singing traditional Christmas carols and popular holiday tunes is not uncommon come December. In this competition version of karaoke, singers have to keep on singing even when the lyrics get turned off or covered to test their true knowledge of these songs. Present stackers. This requires keeping a collection of oddly shaped gifts at the ready. Game participants try to stack the presents as tall as they can without having them topple over. Fishing for fun? Hang strings on the straight ends of candy canes to fashion fishing poles, with the curved ends serving as the hooks. Participants try to fish smaller candy canes out of a bowl and see how many they can reel in. And the Noel game. The game referee has a list of a few categories, i.e. food, sports, colors, cars, etc., and players are split into a few teams. When the category is called, the teams have to jot down as many words as they can, pertaining to that category, that do not have a letter L in them before the timer runs out. These are just a few festive ways to have fun with friends and family members during holiday gatherings. We have time to read some briefs. Over 30 Basketball League. The Over 30 Basketball League will run every Wednesday, January 8th through April 30th, 2025, from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. at the ALAH High School Gym. For more information, call Jeremy Hale at 217-402-3351. Christmas dinner. The Vine Street Christian Church in Arthur will be offering free Christmas dinners for people in the community once again this year. Dinners will be distributed from 2 to 4 p.m. Tuesday, December 24th, in front of the church. Please call the church office at 217-543-2292 to reserve your Christmas dinner box. Reservations are suggested and are available to all while supplies last. Candlelight services. The Tuscola United Church of Christ Christmas Eve Day candlelight services 4 p.m. December 24th. The Tuscola United Methodist Church Christmas Eve candlelight services at 7 p.m. December 24th. Movies at the Moose. Family Service Senior Resource Center will be hosting the Movies at the Moose in January due to the date falling on New Year's Day. They'll resume the following month on February 5th, 2025. Arthur Events, December 21st through the 3rd, Saturday Bazaar at Auto Center, December 23rd, Christmas Dinner Pickup at Vine Street Church, December 25th, Merry Christmas. And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.